Welcome to our podcast. This is Reasonable Faith with Dr. William Lane Craig. I'm Kevin Harris. And Dr. Craig, you just returned from South Africa. Very important. Some say that this debate in South Africa was historically significant. Why might that be the case?
Well, this was a wonderful debate to participate in because of the nature of the debate. It was a four-man debate against two very radical South African theologians who are pioneering a movement called the New Reformation in South Africa, which is very similar to the Old Jesus Seminar here in the United States. And these two theologians think that Christianity, as it's traditionally understood, is now outmoded. These two men are not even theists. They don't even believe that there is a personal God who's distinct from the world and has made the world.
But they still want a reformation of Christianity?
Right. They are theologians. They teach theology at the University of South Africa. And the South African church, coming out of a kind of Dutch Reformed tradition, is very pietistic from what we've been told and very ill-equipped to meet the challenges posed by the so-called New Reformation. So the people organizing the debate wanted someone to come in there who could debate these men and really expose the folly and the pretentiousness of their position. And so they wanted to have it on the resurrection of Jesus. And I said, well, if we're going to have a four-man debate, I would like to be partnered with Michael Lacona. Mm. Mike Lacona did his doctorate on the resurrection at the University of Pretoria. So in a sense, this was coming home for Mike. This is his alma mater. And Mike is a very good debater. He's got good techniques, and he and I often talk. We both live in the same area. So they agreed to bring both of us over for this debate. And so it was Mike Lacona and me against Professor Spangenberg and Professor Wolmerans. And it was on the resurrection, but even coming up with a topic was difficult, Kevin, because these two gentlemen are postmodernists. Their view is a kind of incoherent or inconsistent mishmash of scientific modernism with postmodern subjectivism, denial of truth, and objectivity of canons of logic and rationality. Yeah. They deny, for example, that texts have any objective meaning. So they refuse to debate the question, did Jesus rise from the dead? Or was the resurrection a historical event? Because they said even to pose the question presupposes that there are objective answers to the question, that there is objective truth and that these texts do have some sort of meaning, and they don't even agree to that.
Wow.
So we went back and forth, trying to find a proposition that we could agree to debate on. And what we finally arrived at was, how should we understand the texts of the New Testament about the resurrection? How should we understand the texts of the New Testament about the resurrection? And they reluctantly agreed to debate that with us. And so in the debate, I was the opening speaker, and for our two contentions that we defended were that the texts of the New Testament teach that the resurrection of Jesus was a literal historical event, a literal physical event. And then the second contention was that there's no good reason to deny this traditional understanding of the texts. So in my opening speech, I defended the first contention, that the texts of the New Testament teach that the resurrection of Jesus is a literal historical event. And I pointed out Paul's disquisitions on the resurrection in 1 Corinthians 15, the sermons and the Acts of the Apostles, which treat the resurrection on a par with the crucifixion and burial of Jesus, an event verified by witnesses, and then the whole empty tomb tradition in the Gospels, which point to the objectivity of this as a real physical event in history. And I talked a little bit about the Jewish reclamation of Jesus, because in preparing for the debate, I found that Professor Wolmerans appeals to pagan mythology as the origin of the early belief in Jesus' resurrection. He takes this view that's popularized on the internet, that's been invalidated by scholars for 100 years, that the belief in the resurrection is based upon pagan mythology.
That it was borrowed from pagan myths.
Particularly from myths about Dionysus or Bacchus, the god of wine and revelry and frenzy.
Osiris.
His favorite is Dionysus. I thought I need to explain to the audience, first and foremost, the Jewish reclamation of Jesus, that biblical scholars have come to discover that the proper interpretive context for understanding Jesus of Nazareth is first century Palestinian Judaism. Jesus was a Jew, all the disciples were Jews, and it is against that background that we are to understand the records of Jesus. And I pointed out then that this has resulted in an increased credibility being accorded to the resurrection narratives, to the empty tomb, the postmortem appearances of Jesus, and the very origin of the disciples' belief in Jesus' resurrection. And that therefore, properly understood, these narratives are presenting themselves as records of a literal historical event. And then I just alluded to the second contention, that there's no good reason to deny this, and pointed out that Vollmerans and Spangenberg are both atheists. And of course, if you're an atheist, you won't believe in the resurrection. And I said that's quite legitimate. But what is not legitimate for the atheist to do is to twist the meaning of the texts to make it accord then with your worldview, and that what you need to do as an honest atheist is to just say that Christianity is false, rather than use some kind of theological double talk to say it's really true, even though the events didn't occur. And then I pointed out to close that really there's no good reason to deny that theism is true. These men are hopelessly out of touch, Kevin, with where natural theology is. And I had with me a copy of the Blackwell Companion to Natural Theology, and I held it up and explained what it is and said, look, anybody who thinks that theism is somehow out of date or obsolete just isn't in touch with current philosophy of religion. And this book is just a palpable example of it.
And that book is available at reasonablefaith.org.
It sure is.
Awesome.
That was how I closed my speech then. And we anticipated then that Spangenberg would get up and give some sort of reasons for why this traditional understanding of the texts is wrong. And that Mike Lacona then would respond to Spangenberg in his speech. So my speech was prepared, but Mike's speech was extemporaneous and would simply be a response to whatever objection Spangenberg would bring up to this traditional understanding of the texts. So that was the strategy we developed for the debate.
Now, how did Mike respond?
Well, what happened was that Spangenberg got up and he didn't say anything of relevance to this traditional understanding of the text. We thought he would get up and say modern science has invalidated this ancient worldview, or that postmodernism shows that texts don't have any objective meaning. He didn't do any of that. Instead, all he did was get up and describe the different narratives in the four Gospels and how they differ from each other. And then he began to attack the doctrine of original sin and the doctrine of the Trinity. And he said nothing about the resurrection.
Or what the New Testament says about the resurrection.
Right. I mean, he didn't even conclude on the basis of these different narratives that they're hopelessly contradictory and that therefore the three facts that I defended couldn't be true. I mean, he didn't even draw that inference.
But he did try to say that, did he? Was that one of his points? Well, the resurrection narratives look like they're contradictory, so they can't be true. Did he try to argue?
No, he didn't draw that inference. All he did was just review the resurrection narratives and point out, for example, that Mark does not narrate any appearances, but just ends with the women's discovery of the empty tomb, whereas some of the other Gospels have appearances. But whereas Matthew relates an appearance in Galilee, and so does John, Luke does not relate any appearances in Galilee, but has the disciples stay in Jerusalem where they see Jesus. And so he just pointed out those differences. But he didn't even then draw the inference that I thought he would draw, was that therefore the empty tomb and postmortem appearances are not in fact historical, which yeah. would have been an overreach. And maybe he had enough insight as a historian to know that that would be an overreach, and so he didn't draw that conclusion. But he just left it there. He just described the differences and then turned to attacking the doctrine of original sin and the doctrine of the Trinity. So poor Mike Lacona has to get up and he has nothing to refute. So Mike basically, after describing how it was great to be coming home to the University of Pretoria, and then characterizing for the audience what a red herring is, how it's a smelly fish that you drag across the path of the bloodhounds to get them to go off track and follow some other track rather than go after their quarry. After describing what a red herring is, Mike just said all that Professor Spangenberg did was bring up red herrings in his opening speech. And while those issues are important and worth discussing in some other context, they're not the subject of tonight's debate. And so I'm not going to say anything about them. And instead, Mike then responded to some of the arguments that Spangenberg had given in his published work, which we had prepared briefs on, but hadn't even bothered to bring up in the debate. And so that was the way it kind of went the whole evening, was that they just wouldn't even engage with the arguments. They had almost nothing to say. Now, Vollmerans was a little different, if I may be permitted to describe what he did.
Go for it.
He was going to bring up the mythology stuff. But again, even his presentation was weak because he didn't actually give any of the parallels between Christ and these pagan deities, so that there really wasn't even anything there to respond to. Instead, he just asserted that the Gospels were mythological. And I was prepared for this in my rebuttal, and I explained that the vast majority of New Testament historians believe that the literary genre, which is closest to the Gospels, is the genre of ancient biography, and that therefore the Gospels are not of the genre of mythology, but rather they're of the genre of ancient biography, which did have a historical interest, and that's why the Gospels relate stories about people that actually lived, like John the Baptist, Joseph Caiaphas, Pontius Pilate, whom you can read about in the works of the Jewish historian Josephus. They talk about events that really happened and about places that really existed that have been archaeologically excavated. These aren't of the genre of mythology. These are ancient biography, which have a historical interest and have been confirmed in many cases by other ancient historians and archaeology. And I said, therefore, what has led Professor Vollmerans to think of the Gospels as mythology is his philosophical naturalism. It's because he thinks that anything that relates a supernatural event must be mythological that he classifies the Gospels as myths. So his ascribing the Gospels to the genre of mythology is not based upon a careful, comparative literary analysis of the Gospels. It's based upon the philosophical presupposition of naturalism. So here you have a good illustration of how a philosophical presupposition has led this person into a disastrous misdiagnosis of the literary genre of a piece of writing out of a philosophical prejudice. Well, he again had nothing to say in response to.
And that's what you meant when you said that, well, as an atheist, we'd expect you not to believe in the resurrection and so on, because on an atheistic or naturalistic worldview, supernatural things don't happen. Therefore, the resurrection didn't happen.
Right.
So that's what you meant by that. But here it's an examination of these texts as the topic of debate. And so,
right. The topic of the debate was, what do the texts teach, or what do they say? How should we understand them, rather? And it was funny, at Vollmerans, in his response, he said, I'm not saying that we should understand them as mythology, just that we could.
Oh.
To which I said, well, of course you could, but then you'd be wrong.
Well, you can read them as a cookbook if you want.
Right. I mean, you can do anything you want.
How to make lasagna.
Yeah, I mean, you can do anything you want in terms of what you could do, but The debate topic for that evening was how should we understand them, and a proper literary diagnosis of these texts would be that these aren't of the genre of mythology, rather they're ancient biographies of Jesus. And then I gave some historical evidence for the empty tomb, the postmortem appearances, and so forth. And in his final speech, poor Vollmerans just went into this long story about parents whose little boy died, and they had ordered a birthday cake for the little boy. And so when he died, they didn't go to the bakery to pick it up, and the baker was angry with the parents because they didn't come on time, and so he was left with the cake on his hands. And then eventually the parents did go to the baker, and they explained their son had died, and so they together, I don't know if they ate the cake or something, but I mean, it went on and on and on, and nobody saw the point of this anecdote. I mean, it was just kind of like out there. We all were sitting there scratching our heads thinking, what does this have to do with anything?
Do you understand it all now?
No, I still don't know what the point was related, but you know, it was so typical of liberal theology. Kevin, I am convinced, and I'm not being provocative here, but I am convinced that liberal theology is profoundly anti-intellectual. They claim that it's these Bible-believing fundamentalists who are the people that are opponents of the intellect. I don't think that's at all true. I think liberal theology is deeply anti-intellectual because on an intellectual level, they have no good reasons for believing what they do. It is all based upon sentimentality and mysticism.
Wow.
And when you ask them, give me some arguments for your position, they're utterly inept, nor can they refute the arguments for the position on the other side. I saw this with Bishop Spong in my debate with him. It was evident in the debate with Marcus Borg. It's all based upon sentimentality and mysticism.
Yeah, almost. It's not important whether you get to the truth or what the facts are and so on. Is it profound?
Profundity is a spiritual need. Spangenberg, after Mike Lacona's speech, got up to give his rebuttal, and I have never seen anybody so angry in a debate before. He really lost it, Kevin, and he began to rail against Christianity for its role in apartheid in South Africa, and talk about how Orthodox Christianity is dangerous and harmful. And it was just a diatribe against the abuses that Christianity had been put to in South Africa in supporting apartheid and discrimination. It had no relevance whatsoever to the historicity of the resurrection or the teaching of these New Testament narratives. It was all an attempt to just push the hot buttons of the audience, knowing that their opposition to apartheid would somehow translate into an opposition to Orthodox Christianity. It was really manipulative.
Reminds me kind of some elements of the Silverman debate that you did with Dr. Silverman. He took the opportunity to list his litany of sacred cows, of his issues, his hot buttons, and he wanted to take advantage of the platform to get those out. Yep. And, well, so much for the debate topic. I've got to get my pet peeves out and take this opportunity to do it.
Yeah, a lot of lowbrow atheists do this too, who aren't capable of arguing on a philosophical level about theism and atheism. They use it as an excuse for talking about social and political issues. I can't tell you how many times in debates, especially in Europe, my opponent has brought up George Bush and the war in Iraq. And for them, this is the decisive refutation of the resurrection of Jesus, that George Bush is a Christian and he started the war in Iraq. Yeah. It just
so God must not exist.
Yeah. Yeah, so God doesn't exist.
Well, thank you so much for listening to Reasonable Faith. And we'll be adding new podcasts each week, so be sure you come back. Finally, thank you so much for your financial support. This keeps the ministry of Reasonable Faith expanding. You know, even the name Reasonable Faith gets so many people's attention. They often assume that faith in God is not reasonable or supported by facts and evidence. The name alone can break down unnecessary barriers and bring people to Dr. Craig's work on these crucial questions of life. So check out reasonablefaith.org, click through all the great resources there, and if you wish, you can safely donate there as well. It would be a blessing. We appreciate it. I'm Kevin Harris. We'll see you next time on Reasonable Faith with Dr. William Lane Craig.